Time to take a look at weather and climate today. Larry Mueller here with our guests, John Martin, professor, former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. Hi, John.
Hey, Larry. How you doing?
I'd do better if I turned your microphone
on.
Hey,
how you doing?
I'm doing okay. And Steve Ackerman along as well, directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison. Great to have you back, too.
If my mic is on, it's great to be here. If it's not, I'll take it as a hint.
Well, you know, I've been gone for a whole week in Canada. And, you know, I have to almost actually sit and think a little bit about what I'm supposed to do here. It's amazing. Only a week away. And actually, in Saskatchewan, the weather was nice. Actually, pretty nice. Mm. And somebody said, well, Wisconsin always gets Saskatchewan weather about 2 days later.
I would say that might be true for wintertime.
Yeah.
Probably not for some of the
year. For some times of the year.
And you can have situations where it can remain warm in the immediate lee of the Canadian Rockies in Saskatoon, a place like that, and it'll just stay cold here in May and June. So,
well, it's pretty often.
It does depend on the season.
I go there every year in May, the third or fourth week of May for this tournament, and it's pretty much always, almost always, much warmer up there than it is here.
Yeah, that's not surprising to me.
Yeah, wasn't this year. I think it was a little warmer. And we had some storms.
We had some good storms pass through the area the last couple of days.
We had two early morning thunderstorms, and then we had the Saturday afternoon one that was really dramatic. So at least three that were really noteworthy, and more than that, but those were the three that were really high profile.
We should let our listeners join. If you have a question or comment or experience to share, maybe a photo to share, go to our Facebook page for a photo to share at the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page. You can also call us at 1-800-642-1234 or go ahead and email us at talk@wpr.org. Certainly would love to hear from you. And Steve, sent us a nice little photo.
Yeah, this Pileus cloud, which is kind of like a veil that was often, no, not often, but you see it on the top of thunderstorms where you have the updraft, so you have this what we call overshooting top or this cauliflower structure.
Yeah.
We got some really good views of that in southern Wisconsin, provided the storm wasn't sitting over you, where you can see this overshooting top. And a number of people took these photos of these Pileus clouds, which are occurring just up above as the updraft, which is pretty violent, kind of moves a whole layer of air upward above it. And that layer reaches condensation, and you get this little nice veil topping the severe storm.
Hmm. Very, very cool. If you want to see that photo, just go to our Facebook page. Again, The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our page, and we've got it right up. You can take a quick look at it if you would like. You were also, as long as we're talking about just things that just happened, you were talking about something called red sprites.
Yeah, and again, because these thunderstorms were sitting off to the horizon, rarely, but it does occur, you can get these features called red sprites, and I think there's also things called blue elves that occur far up above the thunderstorm. And it's it usually occurs with positive lightning, which, again, is not something that's all that common, at least not as common as what's called negative lightning. And that electrifies the upper atmosphere and excites the molecules up there, sort of like similar to what you would excite, like a fluorescent light bulb or a neon light, and it glows red. There was somebody, Todd Delaney, I think maybe. He posted a picture on his Facebook that people passed around. And you know, I saw a green flash many years ago. The next thing I want to see is these sprites. It was just amazing picture. And then the NASA posted a picture from the space station that also saw it.
That would be really cool.
And that's really cool. The two of them together is amazing because the picture that this fellow Todd took, you know, it looks like it's right above it. And it's very clear and very distinctly red. I mean, it's hard to miss it if you were looking there. But then when you see from the space shuttle, you can see that it's miles above where the thunderstorm top is.
Interesting.
So it's pretty interesting.
Very cool.
Yeah, to catch one from the ground is just maybe unprecedented. I don't know if I've ever heard of that.
I know people have seen it. I think they first saw it in the late 1800s.
Yeah.
Once we got up into space and the space station, it became more. Or actually, the other place where they started seeing a lot was with U-2s, you know, flying those high-altitude spy planes.
Yeah. No, we never had that conversation.
No. what conversation?
Well, we have, Todd, Tom in Oshkosh. Can't tell for sure here. Oh, there we go.
Yes.
Tom, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, what's on your mind?
I'd like to know why they don't get thunder and lightning storms in Seattle, Washington.
Ah, they do. But they're not as common. You're right about that. They are not as common. I lived there for 8.5 years, and we had a couple of real doozies. In fact, there's a poster. I know the date. I wasn't there at the time. I think it was September 1st, 1984. Somebody was up on Queen Anne Hill looking down toward the Space Needle and got this fantastic lightning picture over downtown Seattle. So it's iconic. So you don't get them that often. One of the reasons why is because the thunderstorms in that part of the country are very low-topped. They might be only 10,000 feet deep. And it simply isn't deep enough for there to be the kind of charge separation that that's required to really have a, you know, cacophonous, continuous lightning thunder show like we get out here, where the clouds can get as deep as 60,000 feet. And there's a, you know, a huge as 10 miles of depth there for the ice to be bouncing off of each other and creating charge separation. Usually the thunderstorms that occur in the Seattle Pacific Northwest area are very much lower topped storms. And the consequence is they don't get as much charge separation. It's not as common to get lightning and thunder there, but it does happen. And when it does, it's noteworthy. Everybody pays attention, but precisely because of your instinct that it's so rare.
Okay. Very interesting.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Tom. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Let's go to Chris next from Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a question that might be silly. But the first Sunday in August of last year, we got a hailstorm, and we're in the Wisconsin Rapids Rudolph area, and we got some pretty big chunks of ice that came down. Mm. So I picked them up, and I just brought them in, and I put them in just a plastic bag, maybe a double plastic bag, threw them in my freezer. And would you believe that they're still pretty much that same size now, today? Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering, I don't make ice cubes for myself because they usually evaporate because I don't use them fast enough. Is there a difference in the composition of the ice we try to make for ice cubes as the ice that came out of the sky?
Yeah, I would. It's probably a little bit different because of the sauce. Not the sauce that you eat.
Watch out.
The sauce.
That's Long Island talking.
Long Island talking. But I don't think it'll be anything dangerous to eat. I would look for bugs. Sometimes bugs get caught up in them as they're forming. They often need like nuclei to begin the formation. A lot of times that's just a piece of dust in the atmosphere. But I've seen cross sections where, you know, there's been like a ladybug that got caught
and that began.
I think you would already know that by looking at it.
But I wasn't thinking of consuming them. I was just thinking that they've held their shape and still so much ice where regular water ice that we would make, I would think of it evaporated so much by now.
Yeah. Well, you said you had it wrapped up, right, in a bag?
That's a plastic bag.
Yeah. If it was not in a plastic bag, then it would have sublimed and evaporated away.
Yeah. And I can testify, again, going back to my Seattle experience, I can testify to that. Once in a while, you get what's not even that uncommon. You get pea size or even marble size hail in the Puget Sound. And I was always captivated the way you were last summer. I went out and I put a whole bunch of those hailstones on a piece of cardboard or something, put it in my freezer. Big mistake to not wrap it up because it does. It just sublimates away. It disappears. And so my now wife, then I was interested in her. I said, hey, I got to show you something that's kind of cool. I collected these hailstones some weeks ago. She said, yeah, I'm really interested. So I brought her over anyway. And I took out the piece of cardboard and they were all gone. So
I'm going to guess she was more interested in you than the hailstones. And
let me just put it this way. The stock went down that day. Yeah. But you got to put them in a bag. So you did the right thing. I think that's largely the issue here.
And you probably could still put them in a drink if you want to have them with your coat. Or something.
That's cool.
No, I wasn't thinking of drinking.
Thanks, Chris.
Regular ice cubes would have seemed to evaporate. Well, thank you so much for your information.
You bet.
Yeah, appreciate it. And we have Bonnie in Waupaca sent us a Facebook note. She says, often when a storm has rolled through, and usually about the time we think it's safe to go back outside, there will be one last shower, even though the sun is coming out. Are we imagining this phenomena? Or is this tricky tail-end storm a real thing?
Well, there's definitely going to be times where you'll see breaks in the clouds after the main convective part of the thunderstorm's gone by and you're in the stratiform clouds, and sometimes those clouds can be pretty high, and you might not expect it's still precipitating out of them, and it starts to break up a little. You get that last sun shower. I think if you kept score, that would probably not happen half the time. It'd be less than half the time. But you know, you never forget it because it's so unusual. Yeah. And if it happens three or four times in a particular span of a couple of years, you're going to say, "Oh, doesn't this happen all the time?" So that's my guess.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And I think it is. You really would remember it because I was just thinking it just happened to me this weekend. You know that
me too.
It looked like it was done. It was like you went out and you start doing something. Yeah. All of a sudden, you get hit by these big drops, and you're like, "What the?" And then you remember it.
I thought we had a deal.
Right. The tour over. Yeah.
Thanks, buddy. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. So there was a lot of thunderstorm activity. Someone wondered, is this more than normal, or does it just seem that way?
Yeah, I don't think it's more than normal. I mean, you get either, this time of year, it could be even worse. I mean, there have been Memorial Day weekends that are complete washouts. In fact, you have this kind of repeated thunderstorm activity. You get a shower, and then the sun comes out again, evaporates some of the freshly fallen rain, and another one builds in the next hour. So we didn't have it nearly as bad as I thought it could have been. And the reason was the structure of the atmosphere just wasn't right for that kind of a washout weekend. So we had what I think I would consider sort of an average first week of summer, high humidity, chance of thunderstorm activity. We had three or four events.
Yeah.
Luckily, many of them were at times of day where nobody cared. So that was lucky.
And how about temperature now? What are the temperature statistics looking like these days?
What's the average high?
So, I don't know. I know that April's been, we were at and slightly below, most of Wisconsin was at and slightly below their average temperature for May.
Yeah, and the first 2 weeks were particularly cold. So they set us into a real deficit. And then the last week, we had some days that were well above normal, some mid-80s that were
humid, too.
Yeah, high dew points, definitely,
Well, I left, I left on Tuesday morning, flew out early Tuesday morning for Saskatchewan and came back last night about 11:30. But even in the night, dark, I could see that my plants had just shot up.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you get the heat and some rain.
And good rain.
Yeah,
and
good,
the good kind.
Yeah.
And everything. And then this morning, first thing I had to do was go out and take a look. And man, the hostas and everything had just exploded.
Yeah, I spent a lot of Saturday weeding.
Yeah, I'm in my fourth or fifth grass cut of the year, and again, that's unusual for me, and it doesn't happen.
Yeah,
every
I'm trying to put off my next one, but
there's no putting mine off. I mowed the day before I left, and it's going to be mow time tonight. Actually, after work,
good weather for it. Well, maybe you won't have good weather for it. Get it in before it gets dark. I guess you'd do that anyway, but it's going to rain.
Well,
overnight.
Wait until it rains.
Oh, it's going to rain overnight.
It's going to rain overnight.
Well, Jerome and Mequon has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Jerome.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
My question is, what causes some clouds to carry a positive charge and other clouds to carry a negative charge?
I'm not sure. Well, I know that I don't know the answer to that, why some prefer negative, having more negative versus more positive. I know that in October, NOAA is going to be launching a new satellite that'll be looking at that situation. So hopefully we'll be learning more and more about the lightning. But
I guess it has at some foundational level has to do with the ice presence in the cloud.
Yeah.
And tropical clouds sometimes have no ice in them, and those that don't almost never have lightning and thunder with them. So it's kind of a misnomer to see these shipwreck movies where someone's in the tropics and there's thunderstorm going on. It's not that common. It rains heavily.
My question was related to why are some different than others? Both cause one to be positive and one the other to be negative.
We don't know.
I don't know that.
Yeah.
And just to go take that a little further, now you mentioned NOAA is going to be doing some research on that. Somebody might ask, well, what's the benefit of research on something
that? One thing that stands out in my mind anyway in response to that is that there does tend to be an association. It's not understood. Nobody really understands why this is true, but there tends to be an association between negative lightning strikes, cloud-to-ground lightning strikes, and severe weather. Particularly tornadic storms tend to have a certain bias towards one type or the other, and nobody understands why. So there's one particular reason why we might learn more about the storms that produce tornadoes by understanding this question a little bit.
Very interesting. Thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. We're taking a look at weather and climate today with Steve Ackerman and John Martin from the University of Wisconsin-Madison Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. I'm Larry Mueller. Brandy Funk, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Net. Coming up, let's see, when is that? Coming up at 11:45 on this show anyway, we'll be talking with a surgeon who specializes in mouth and throat issues, and he'll be talking about cancer warning signs, preventing, and we'll also, of course, take your questions. That's coming up next. Right now, though, taking a look at weather with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, and an open line or two. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Always love to hear from you. Dave and Grand Chute, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, good morning. This might be an unanswerable question, but when I look at all of what's going on in the country and the tornadoes in Texas and Oklahoma, you know, hurricanes in Florida and so on, do we kind of live in the safest place in the country up here? It always seems that way to me.
I would agree definitely that that is a, we've had a little bubble of protection over us this spring because there's been all kinds of hellish stories around the rest of the country that we have not been subjected to. It's not always the case, though. So I wouldn't say that it's, you know, it's a guarantee or a sense that we never get visited by stuff like that at this time of year or any other time of year. But right now, I'd say for sure, this has been a lucky place to be because the weather has been quite benign.
We've been here for like 31 years, and there was a tornado the year before we came. There was a small tornado a couple of years ago, and that's all I can remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're extremely local events, and so that's going to be true even for some residents of Oklahoma, longtime residents of Oklahoma. But the widespread nature of some of the flooding that's been going on down in the Southwest and, you know, the repeated battery of severe weather, it's definitely true that this spring we haven't been subjected to that. But then on the other hand, they're not ever subjected to ice and snow the way we are up here. And so,
yeah,
on balance, it might not be much different, but it certainly has been this spring. Much better place to live here than anywhere else. I agree.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Speaking of tornadoes, what if normally May is not a big tornado month? I mean, we get some, but we haven't, I can't recall of any hearing about a lot of tornadoes in the month May. Well, it was so cold.
No, we peak
the first
a little
part.
Later, don't we?
Yeah, it's a July, August.
Yeah, it's a July, August
thing. I think early August is the peak, yeah.
So I mean, it's not like we don't have any bad weather, as you say.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm wondering if how would you classify the safest weather place in the U.S. to live?
Good question.
You know, I mean, initially I was thinking, well, maybe Southern California, but then they get hit by El Nino and dealing with flooding,
which
is also dangerous.
Right.
So it'd be an interesting thing to try and figure out.
I know, it would be. I don't know what I would even guess at. That would have been my first guess.
But
and that's a really good response to that guess, is that, periodically it's the worst place to be.
To live, right, yeah.
But maybe overall it's not the worst.
Yeah.
Well, we won't dwell
on
that.
We like it here, actually.
That's why
we're still here.
It's interesting, and it's not always that threatening.
Phil in Hebron, Illinois, up next. Hi, Phil.
Good morning, you guys. I have a question for these fellas. I followed their favorite weatherman, Tom Skilling, in the Weather Service, and I work outside for a living, and it seems like the forecast on a regular basis contain the words expect downpours or downpours in these specific areas. The other day, we got 3/4 inch in 7 minutes. I assume that's a downpour.
Yeah.
What defines a downpour?
That's a good question. Do you know, Steve?
I don't know if there's a technical term that would go with
either.
The National Weather Service glossary or anything. Yeah, other than heavy precipitation. But, yeah, if Tom is telling you there's a downpour to be expected, I would expect one. He's a pretty good forecaster.
Yeah, and I think that would qualify for me, too. If you get, you know, half an inch or more rain in a few minutes, that's a lot of rain in a short amount of time. You know, the kind that makes your street look like a river for a five or ten-minute period, that's a downpour. I wonder if the forecasters use that word. I don't know if it's more frequent now or not, but if they do use it more frequently, it may be a way to sort of translate this notion that 50% of the viewing area is going to be subjected to scattered thunderstorms. When they hit you, it's going to be heavy, but it's not going to last that long. It might be a way of coloring that forecast a little bit more. I don't know.
Yeah, and weather forecasters are really working now at how to communicate things to the public more efficiently. And so they may understand what is a downpour better than a half an inch of rain in 2 hours.
Right,
And you always know it's a downpour when somebody looks out the window and said, holy cow, yeah, look at the weather. Look at the rain come down.
Boy,
that's a downpour.
Yeah. You know, for me, receiving that information as a private citizen, I'm going to be, if I hear that word downpour, I'm going to say to myself, okay, if it does start to rain, I don't have to expect I'm out on a fishing trip. It's not going to rain for 3 straight hours lightly and make me feel miserable. It'll rain heavily. As soon as it starts to rain, let's get ashore, wait it out, and we'll get back out. Yeah. So it changes the way that I view what that forecast is really trying to tell me.
Hmm. Interesting. Bob in Land O'Lakes up next. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, I had two quick questions. One had to do with this Seattle getting not having thunderstorms, and you said that that region has a low ceiling, so that's why it doesn't get it. But I was wondering, why does it have a low ceiling, and are there other regions that have that same phenomenon? That's the question number one. Question number two is probably more important. Last summer, I live up in Land O'Lakes, and my house is only about a half mile from the state line in the Upper Peninsula. And last summer, July, I believe it was, woke up in the morning, come outside, and everything's covered with this oily, blackish precipitate of some sort. Hmm. And I was really concerned about it because, I mean, you could still see it. Covered my skylights and our mailboxes. Everybody along the road, mailboxes were covered with this stuff, so you could see it. And even the mailbox today, still, you can still see the kind of the grime on it. My cabin, I also have a cabin about 34 miles to the west, and the exact same thing was there. So it was quite a larger region that this came down on. No idea what it was. Did he ever have any reports? Because it didn't look healthy, whatever it was.
Was it coming? Did you see it after the fact or during?
After the fact. It was covering everything.
In the last couple of weeks?
No, last year.
Last year. Yeah.
I could scrape it off. I feel like I should have it tested or something if it's something toxic or something. But something came down out of who knows where.
Was there a large forest fire somewhere?
That's what I'm
nearby?
Thinking too.
It didn't look to me. I mean, I've lived up there 30 years. I've never seen anything like this. Yeah. And it was kind of oily. It was kind of grimy. It was very strange.
Yeah, I'm thinking of like heated turpentine or something, like a pine forest goes up. Maybe we're thinking the same thing.
Right, yeah.
There's a lot of fluid in those pine trees, and it does get converted into particles that can then become aqueous and they're a solution. I wonder if that's not part of it. I don't know. It's a really strange observation.
Over the course of a couple of days or something, this was a one-time event.
Yeah, no, it would... I'm thinking we had something similar down here in Madison back in, I think it was in the late 90s. Mm. It was a little different, but it was smoke from a forest fire down in Mexico that came up into Madison and just covered everything with a dust. So if you added
that.
A light rain to it or something, it probably changed that consistency into something oily
but
yucky.
Did it stick around for a year? My skylights are still covered.
Yeah, no, it was dry, so it wasn't associated with precipitation. It was a dry deposition, so, you know, a wind or rain would wash it right off. Yeah. And what I'm thinking of is yours, it could have precipitation falling through it and the raindrops picking it up and then
and
making
then
it more sticky.
It's much hotter to get rid of it then because only the water evaporates and it leaves the sticky residue behind. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's weird. I don't know. That's my best guess. Yeah. Some kind of forest fire.
That's what I would have guessed,
too.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Jean in Reedsburg. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Glad to talk to you.
Oh.
I've got a question about tornadoes. I've only been near, like, two tornadoes in my life where they've been, you know, in imminent danger. And one was a number of years ago, might have been early 90s, and John Martin might have been with that. We were at a group camp out in Blanchardville, and this tornado came through, and we all had to run for cover, and we tried to find a culvert someplace down low to run into. We had a bunch of kids with us and everything because it was a big family camp out. But my question is, why does the sky turn all yellow, greenish, weird color when tornadoes are, like, right there?
Yeah. I don't remember that, Gene. We might have skipped that trip. That might be what it is. I can't remember if I was ever in a situation where I was trying to tell my kids, could you imagine what they would have asked? Dad, is it really going to hit us? I don't know. That would have been difficult to get over. So I don't know if I was involved in that. But the green sky, the green part of the sky, I think has to do with refraction of sunlight through giant pieces of ice that are suspended in the clouds. So usually associated with the environment that can spawn a tornado will be really intense updrafts of air that can suspend very large pieces of ice. And so that's why hail often falls in the vicinity of tornadoes as well. And light gets refracted through that ice. And so the ice must be big enough and composed the right way to actually send out mostly green light toward your eyes. Same thing happens with the bottom of icebergs in Antarctica. For a long time, it was a question, how come they look green? They glow green at a certain time of day under the water level, and that's what it was, refraction. So that's related, I think.
Yeah, you see a green thunderstorm, you know they're loaded up with water and it's severe, and you're going to get something nasty.
Something's coming. Yeah.
There you go.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Gene, for calling. Paul in Washington County, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Question I had in regard to lightning again. Lightning is a low amperage, high voltage flow of electrons. So the questions I have are these electrons stripped from the outer valence electrons of the atmospheric gases at a higher altitude?
No, they're more. It's more like the. It's like ice particles colliding with liquid water or other particles that have a lot of liquid with them. So it's much like the balloon rubbing against wool. So the exchanges are occurring on those objects as opposed to, you know, the molecules of the oxygen or nitrogen or whatever.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's basically, it's nature establishing equilibrium again.
Yeah, is it after a static, collection of charge just by friction between objects? Yeah.
Yeah.
I see. Okay, that's a question. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And let's turn to Bob in Eau Claire next. Hi, Bob.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thank you for coming in on the day after Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, ripped out of today's headlines, the Brazos River in southeastern Texas is right now 3 feet above the previous record. And still hasn't crested, and that previous record isn't all that old, and you know, this is like the town somewhere down south that's had 3,000-year weather events in the course of the last decade. Are we looking at more examples of climate change here?
Well, it's a very good question. We just had an article in the paper on Monday in the State Journal. It was talking about what's gone on in Houston. They've had 5 100-year events, and Steve and I tried to define what that was, and that is that it's in the normal course of events, it will take 100 years for such an event to occur again, and they've had 5 of them in the month of May down in the Houston area in terms of heavy rain events. So when you start to pile up those kind of unusual events in that sort of a sequence with that kind of frequency, you really have to wonder, have the rules changed a little bit about how these things are organized and how they develop? And it strikes me that, at least to suggest that the rules have changed a little bit in terms of creating these kinds of severe events, is consistent with a broader global picture of a warming planet. So there's nothing that contradicts that. Whether or not it's 100% certain that those 5 once-in-100-year events in Houston that have brought the Brazos River to that point are symptomatic of climate change, I think you got to say that with the 95% certainty, but you can't say it with 100% certainty.
Yeah. There we go.
I can live with that. And,
yeah. How many things do you not act on when you have 95% certainty?
Right. Yeah.
Not many.
Okay. No.
All right.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Too bad we can't move that rain around a little bit. There's some other parts. Isn't California and Arizona are both.
So California is, contrary to political statements, California is still under a drought type of situation. So it would be nice to get that water there, though you want to distribute it. You also don't want it in that downpour.
That's
if we
right.
Use that word,
yeah.
kind of way.
You want it in snow in the wintertime. Then it's in the bank.
Right. Yeah.
Slowly leaks out. Use it then.
Well, we were in that golf tournament in Canada, of course. It rained on Sunday, and people were mighty happy. The province right next door, as you know, thousands of acres.
Yeah, they had a little fires there, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Tens of thousands of acres. Marguerite in McGregor, Iowa. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I can't believe I got on. I called so late. On Saturday afternoon, I was traveling in northeast Iowa and saw the most awesome cloud I've ever seen. And my sister was at the same time in southwest Wisconsin in Boscobel. And she and I talked about that. We wondered if there's a name for such a cloud. Hmm. It looked like an atomic bomb went off. It was just tremendous. It had to have been miles and miles and miles high. And it was real flat on top. It was a big mushroom cloud.
Yeah.
Is there a certain...
I think you saw a spectacular, probably isolated cumulonimbus cloud. Which somewhere underneath that thing, it was, yeah, so it's a garden variety type of cloud, but they don't all grow to be as spectacular as the one that you're testifying to. So this is a really dramatic event. And I think when they're isolated, if that's what happened, you really can see the full dimensionality of them better than you can if they're in a line like we had come through here on Saturday. You could see the front edge, but you can't really see the side dimensions of them as well. Uh-huh. But when they're isolated, wow, they can be dramatic.
Yeah, it was tremendous. It was really beautiful, and the sun shone on it. It was evening, and really spectacular.
Did you get a picture?
My sister did.
Oh, great.
She got some really good pictures.
Our department chair just won a contest, a photo contest, for taking a picture of an isolated cumulus, I think, 3 or 4 summers ago. So, it's a great picture he took.
Was there a lot of lightning in it, too?
No, none at all.
Oh, really? Huh.
It was real... dry, it didn't look like it was threatening rain or anything.
It looked like a big cauliflower head?
Well, yeah, like a big mushroom, like a big toadstool.
But was it fuzzy on the edges, or was it sharp, defined sharply on the edges,
It was pretty defined.
Yeah, probably no ice in it yet, so that might be why there's no
growing.
Lightning.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Charlie in Madison up next. Hi, Charlie.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
There was a beautiful rainbow Sunday afternoon, and it was just perfect. It went all the way across the sky. And about, say, 10 degrees above it, there was a very faint double rainbow. Mm. And the colors, to me, looked like they were in the double rainbow, or the faint one, were just the reverse order.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of being red on top, it was blue. And, going
gotcha.
Opposite direction.
Yeah, the key between, and that's, that's a good observation. And what it is in that the lower rainbow, which we call the primary rainbow, which is much more common than to see the two of them, the light that's coming from the sun is at your back, reflects off of the back of the drop as the sun ray is entering the drop. In that secondary rainbow, which we call the higher rainbow, it actually makes two reflections off the raindrop. And those two reflections cause everything to get reversed. So you end up with red colors on the bottom in the secondary as opposed to red on the top when you do the primary.
Yeah, that's cool. And the reason why the second one or third one, sometimes you get three or more, why they get fainter and fainter is there's always a little bit of light leaking out the backside of the drops. They're not mirrors because they're solid, liquid particles. But you keep on losing a little bit of light at each reflection point, so they get dimmer and dimmer and dimmer. But, boy, that was a dramatic event. I think I saw that one on Sunday, but it sounds like you had a really good view of it.
And we didn't see it
because
we were looking. But it just tells you need to be in the right position relative to where the sun is and where the rain is falling.
Yeah.
But because
we
were watching at our house and we didn't see it. And then everybody was posting these beautiful photos. And I was like, darn it. Between that and the red sprites, it was a very disappointing thunderstorm.
Rainbow is very personal.
Right.
It's very personal.
Right. It's your own.
I can remember a John Nolan Drive, which is going across the lake, and people pulling over on John Nolan Drive to stop for a double rainbow that was, and in both bright.
Right.
Both
of
them really bright. And people were jumping out of their cars and taking photos.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. It was an awesome, because it was all the way across the lake.
Yeah.
So it was perfect. Unfortunately, I don't know what happened there. We lost our callers. That happens sometimes, I guess. Maybe it was the weather. Who knows?
The fact about the rainbow, I think one of my good friends happened to snap a picture himself of that, and the end of the rainbow was hovering over a brewery. And he couldn't resist pointing out, wow, it's really true. There is a brewery at the end of the rainbow.
Oh, boy.
And it was the one on Sunday, now that I think of it.
Oh. It could affect us, I guess. I'm wondering about the tropical storms, the hurricane season. Mm. That's coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, NOAA's predicting slightly above average, 6 to 10 named storms.
Yeah, it officially starts tomorrow, even though we've had our second one of the year along the coast. I guess South Carolina, North Carolina.
It starts today, June 1st.
Tomorrow's June 1st.
It starts tomorrow.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, today.
But it's been underway for 10 days or so.
So
it's looking like it's going to be
fairly active season, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. They're looking at the El Nino that we've had that gave us our partly warm winter across the U.S., switching to a La Nina now. Yeah, and La Nina usually makes good for hurricanes in the Atlantic.
Yeah. And the famous Colorado State University forecaster Bill Gray died this spring.
That's right.
So that was a loss for the community. And he had put out his tropical forecast for years, and he was a real genius about that stuff. So, yeah, that's a big loss for us.
And anything out there now that we ought to be keeping our eyes on meteorologically? Anything cool coming up that you know about?
I can't think of anything right now. We don't, as we said earlier, we don't get our major severe threat around here in terms of tornadoes until later in the summertime. That also coincides with when we do have to start worrying about recurving tropical storms for heavy rain events. They don't often get us in June and July. They get us more in August, if they're going to. Mm-hmm. And we might have a period here where the weather just starts to get nice for 6 or 8 weeks and without too much interruption.
And our lawns grow and weeds pop up.
There's other things.
I could deal with that.
Yeah,
that's true.
We'll take one more call and then we're going to go. But Eric and Endeavor, thanks for calling.
Hey, Larry. Hey, I was in Iowa last summer and I saw ball lightning, which I thought was really neat. And I called the weather service. The guy was super jealous.
I am too.
Yes.
And then, but I mentioned it to some of the people around, it was just out of Mason City, Iowa. I mentioned it to some of the locals around there, and they go, yeah, big deal. We see it all the time. Not exactly those words, but a lot of people acted like, yeah, I've seen that. Like it's nothing to them. So is it common in some places, or is it just...
I don't know about that.
I don't know. I thought it was a pretty rare event. So maybe they just don't want to be jealous?
Or they had a little too much Mason City lager or something? I don't know. But, I can't think of why there'd be any particular geographic preference for that place or another.
Yeah, because we don't really understand how it forms either. There's been experiments that are starting to simulate them in the lab, but at a very small scale.
Mm.
And we've had some cool calls from people right here in the state.
Yeah, that's for
right,
sure. Yeah.
They had ball lightning go right through their cabin and so forth.
Yeah,
see it all the time. Huh? What a weird response. I agree with you. That's a weird response. I would not have expected
Eric, you're
that.
Special.
Yeah,
you're
right.
Special, believe
right.
us.
Eric, thanks a lot for calling. And Stephen, John, thank you so much. You'll be back on June 27th,
last Monday of the month.
All right. Yeah.
We'll see you then. Thank you. Steve Ackerman, Director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies, professor in the department. As is John Martin, who's also a professor, former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. They will be back on June 27th, and we'll do this all over again with them. Boy, wasn't that fun? That was really a lot of fun. Coming up, we're going to take a look at something else that isn't so much fun in many ways. About 50,000 people are going to be diagnosed with mouth or throat cancer this year, and we'll talk with Dr. Martin Corston about that next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.